Welcome to an excerpt of the CME activity, Children and Families of Combat Veterans, which is certified by Medscape and presented by Stephen J. Koza, MD. Dr. Koza is a professor, Department of Psychiatry, Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences, Bethesda, Maryland. Dr. Koza has disclosed no relevant financial relationships. Dr. Koza does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Koza does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. The purpose of this activity is to describe factors that positively and negatively affect families of military personnel and opportunities for clinicians to improve care for this population. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.
It's a pleasure to be speaking to this group about military children and families. It's an area that I have been interested in and have spent time with for many years. I'm a retired Army colonel. I've retired from the Army after 25 years working with military kids, really being a clinician, and then moved over to the Uniformed Services University, where I began doing research on military children and families. So today what I'd like to do is to talk about military children and give a broad overview. I know this is a course on PTSD and TBI, and I'm going to be talking some about the impact of those illnesses and injuries on military children and families, but also want to be thinking more broadly as well as I present information. The Center for the Study of Traumatic Stress is at the Uniformed Services University, our federal medical school, on the grounds of Bethesda Naval and soon to be on the grounds of the new Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. So tremendous changes going on at that institution that's going to both affect our medical school as well as our research. The center is under the direction of Dr. Bob Ursano, who many of you may know because of his work in PTSD, the impact of national disasters, terrorism, bioterrorism on communities. And our center is involved in ongoing research, not only with children and families. We're doing quite a bit of work in the area of military child maltreatment, specifically neglect, the impact of combat injury on parents and families, and now a new study on bereavement on military families that I'll be talking about, but also provide a lot of public and professional education and do quite a bit of consultation. Our website is cstsonline.org. There's quite a bit of information there in terms of supporting military families, including this particular fact sheet that talks about the impact of understanding the impact of TBI. I am military families and children, and I've had the opportunity, it's been a bit fun to work with Sesame Workshop and others, as there's been this greater attention on military children over time. I want to preface the talk today, though, to say that this is a relatively young field, that what we know about military kids is growing. There's a small literature, and there's greater interest now. But part of that has to do with the evolution of military families over time, and that back in Vietnam and prior to the beginning of the all-volunteer force, military families were really not quite as prevalent. So we have increasing numbers of military children now that we did not have before. Okay, so about our military community. Well, active duty service members, about 44% have children. Two-thirds of those kids are under the age of 11, and 40% of them are under the age of 5. So a very young families living around the country, many of them living on military installations around the country, but also many of them living in, who are in the Guard and the Reserve, in communities that are more distant from military communities and may or may not be recognized as military kids. But what most folks don't know is that military families actually outnumber service members, and so their health and well-being are as equally important to the health and well-being of the force as is the health and well-being of service members and veterans. I like to say that military kids are our nation's kids. They serve as their parents serve. And also they're our future in the fact that more than any other youth group in the United States, military kids select military careers. So when we think about the fact that 10 years ago, the war started, that if a child was 8 years old at that point, that child is actually at a point now where they could enlist into the service, and so their experiences as military children impact their decisions about joining the service and about what their experiences will like, whether they continue in the service. Last point I want to make about the military communities is to say that we tend to think of this as monolithic. In other words, it's the military. But in fact, about 15% of the military leave the service every year. And so they're moving to communities around the country where we may or may not recognize they're there. So the importance of clinicians broadly looking for military families, asking questions about combat exposures, both in children and in adults. There are certain protective and risk factors just generally for military kids and families. Everybody's got an income, housing, free medical care, and access to a number of different services. But are also there's added stress. We'll talk about the increase in deployments. And then just baseline stressors, relocations, separations, and unique needs of guard and reserve. We've tended to think about military deployments in a simplistic way in the past. People would go away, they would come back, but now we know that deployments are multiple and recurring. So our awareness and our knowledge is developing as we've looked at the impact of these deployments on military children in the current conflict. Studies that were done previously generally have shown military kids are very strong, they're healthy, and in comparisons with their civilian counterparts, do quite well on many measures of behavioral and emotional outcomes, as well as academic outcomes. Okay, in addition to deployments, though sometimes deployments can be complicated, result in injuries, psychiatric illness, and death. And so what I'd like to do is to review some of the literature about the impact of deployments on children and also what we know about the impact of injury, about traumatic brain injury, about PTSD, and about death on military kids. There have been a number of studies that have looked at the impact of deployment both on active duty spouses and on military service members. This was a DOD study that was done of spouses. It's done every 2 years that looked at the impact of deployment on children. In many of these studies, what we're going to find, and I'll be brief in describing this, that there is a theme that develops, that there's high levels of anxiety, that there are increasing behavioral problems in children, that there has been concern of parents about decrease in academic performance, but that most parents will say about 50% of military kids do well, but somewhere in the ballpark of 20 to 25% may be at higher risk and they need additional assistance or service. Okay. Military dependent utilization data similarly has shown that increased utilization of mental health services by military kids, both in the outpatient and the inpatient arena, and that what we found is that younger military kids tend to require more outpatient visits. Older kids have required more inpatient visits. And then several studies that have specifically looked at military children and deployment in populations, examining both through direct measure of children as well as input from parents and caretakers what the impact of deployment has been on children. All right, Anita Chandra from RAND had published a paper in Pediatrics where she had examined the impact of deployment through interview of children and non-deployed caregivers, about 1,500 that were recruited through the National Military Family Association Operation Purple Camp, and looked at a variety of factors that examining family characteristics, deployment history, and child outcomes. Okay, and what she found was that in military youth, they evidenced more emotional difficulties than national samples, that the length of deployment and poor non-deployed caregiver mental health were significantly associated with greater challenges, and this is something that we'll find routinely through these studies. Tricia Lester published a paper in the Journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, also examining the impact of deployment on military children, school-aged children, as well as talking to civilian parents and their active duty parents that were recently deployed. What she found was that both parental distress and cumulative deployment predicted elevated depression and behavioral problems in the children. And maybe one of the most interesting findings was that when service members returned, the stress and distress levels of the non-deployed spouses returned to baseline, but actually those for children stayed elevated. So there was a question about whether deployments in general and the amount of deployments that military kids are facing actually impact that their distress levels stay elevated. And so if that in fact is true, how do we address the needs of children through the deployment cycle, not only during the deployment but during periods of time when the parent is returned? And then also, what do we know about the longitudinal course of the impact of that distress? So what's the impact on their development or on the development of other psychiatric or comorbid problems? Alyssa Manfield has published two papers, one on U.S. Army wives and one on military children, looking at very large numbers of electronic medical records. In the spouse study, there were 250,000 Army wives. In the child study, over 300,000 children, where she examined through the course of deployment the number of mental disorder-related outpatient visits, and found that when she looked at it in three groups, those that never deployed, those that were deployed for 1 to 11 months, or in families where there was more than 11 months of deployment, there was a relationship that those in the higher levels of deployment group actually demonstrated increased need for accessing mental health services in those communities. What we recognize that there's a corrosive impact of deployment, and what appears to be a cumulative corrosive impact of deployment is probably has to do with several factors. First of all, there's the stress in terms of the nature of the separations. By the nature of what we do, this is resulting in the development of single-parent families where parents who are left home, there are many contingencies to be addressed. They have to manage their own anxiety and personal stress. And we do know that single parenting is a risk factor for poorer outcomes in children, so likely contributes to some of these problems. We've looked at child maltreatment and deployment, and there have been three papers that have been published that demonstrate increased levels of child maltreatment during combat deployment periods of time. This was outlined in the press over the past couple of years, with the greatest rise in maltreatment appearing to be attributed to child neglect, and this is an area that we have been focusing on. This shows the Army versus civilian rates of child maltreatment from 1995 to 1999, with generally a trend downward in maltreatment rates, both in the general population as well as in the military. However, if you look now at 2002 through 2005, at times that correspond with elevated deployment rates in military populations, that in fact there's been an increasing relationship between these two problems. So in general, what we find is that the deployment has several impacts on kids. First of all, it increases distress. It puts families at risk for poorer outcomes. It puts families at risk for increasing non-deployed parent mental health problems. There's a relationship we know between the mental health of the stay-at-home provider and the health of the children. So that the relationship there is one that we need to be thinking about in screening families for problems over time. In populations, we need to remember that the vast majority of military families are healthy, but that there is a population where illness is present, and then there is a significant majority that falls somewhere in between, where they're either at risk or they're in some kind of disequilibrium, requiring kind of a broad range of both community-based services as well as potential clinical services. But there are potential risk factors to military families if there's pre-existing psychiatric or developmental problems either in the child or the stay-at-home parent. That's problematic. Stay-at-home spouses that are demonstrating elevated distress clearly contribute higher exposure, whether that has to do with multiple deployments, prolonged deployments. single parenting, those are likely to add greater risk. And then lack of social connectedness or other parenting risk factors, whether that has to do with their anger, psychiatric disorders, disconnection, or marital conflict. Bill Saltzman published an article recently in the Clinical Child Family Psychological Review where he talked about a number of mechanisms of risk and resilience that are really important in thinking about how we support these families and also what's likely to contribute to why families have difficulty. These evidence-based factors, and he does a great review of the literature in that paper, are the foundation for work that's being done on the FOCUS project, Families Overcoming Under Stress, which is a national project that has been used mainly by the Department of the Navy, but also now by other parts of the Department of Defense in developing preventive approaches to military families. And it has to do with the fact that if families don't have a great understanding about the deployment experience, the impact of deployment, or the developmental expectations of children, that education and communication around those areas is extremely important, that we need to ensure that families are communicating effectively, that very often they've had disparate experiences throughout the deployment, so the spouse has been home and has had his or her own challenges as a result of the deployment, but that the service member coming back may have had combat exposures that put them at risk for PTSD, traumatic brain injuries, or other problems. And that certainly impaired parenting, if the parents are either unavailable due to the fact of the illness, or there's problematic leadership or organization in the family in terms of discipline, emotional availability, and regulating and having routine and regular structure in the family, that's also likely to be a problem. And then finally, a lack of a guiding belief system or meaning-making in the family. How do they understand and recognize and see deployment experiences and what family members are doing as something that is useful or valuable to them? If they don't have that belief system in place, it's likely to make their outcomes more difficult. But we know service members have a variety of unique challenges in theater. We expect them to be aggressive, destructive while they're there. They're involved in combat encounters that oftentimes can result in blast exposures or needing to make sudden and life-making or breaking decisions, and they immediately come back to families. They may come back to families with small children that may or may not understand the experience of that service member, or that service member may not be prepared to manage with the what they come back to, being able to take care of a small child or engage young children with as we would expect any parent to be able to do based upon those combat exposures. If there's one important point as part of this presentation that I just want to make is that we can't separate the health of the family and the service members. So there's an interconnection between the health so that when we're thinking about and when we're evaluating service members, one of the most important things that we can do as clinicians is not just focus on the symptoms that they may have related to PTSD or TBI, but also thinking about what are the functional outcomes of those symptoms? How does it impact on their relationships? How does it impact on their capacity to parent effectively, and also to be asking about the health and well-being of children and adult partnerships in their families? We do know in work that's been published that service members who've reported concerns about relationships with family members early on after returning from deployment, if they're followed up months later, at least in this one study, a fourfold increase in veteran concerns related to interpersonal conflict. So it's of significance to service members, and those challenges and concerns likely change over time. So what originally when a family member comes back, they may feel comfortable, but then over a period of several months, they may have increasing difficulty and fights and challenges in terms of parenting, challenges in terms of getting along with their spouses or adult partners develops. The effects of PTSD on families is well reported. In Vietnam veterans, we know that the problems that are caused from PTSD can result in profound changes in marital relationships, family adjustments, and the ability to parent both effectively and in a way that is satisfying to the service member who returns. And that most of the mediating factors of PTSD as it relates to those experiences has to do with emotional numbing, avoidance. The service member is not available to care for children or to be related or engaged with adult partners in their families. And then also, in addition to those relationship difficulties, if there's anger or aggression or depression present in those relationships, it's likely to have powerful negative outcomes. Okay, I want to switch to talk some about combat injury and the impact of combat injury on military families. This shows the geographic distribution of combat veterans returning to parts of the country, not just where military installations are present, but also in places that may or may not recognize the presence of combat injured veteran families, and so the importance, again, of recognizing them in our communities and ensuring that we're meeting their unique needs. This was a study that we published in the American Journal of Psychiatry a couple of years ago looking at depression and PTSD in combat wounded soldiers returning to Walter Reed. We did measures of both depression and PTSD at three times, at 1 month, at 4 months, and at 7 months after initial hospitalization. The three bars on the left look at PTSD, the three bars on the right look at depression, and we can see that when we repeat the measure, those who met threshold for PTSD or depression initially at 1 month, actually fewer of them meet threshold for depression and PTSD later. However, now a new cohort is identified that weren't originally identified in that first month group. And similarly, at 7 months, there are, again, some who continue who were identified earlier on, but now we have additional individuals in the cohort who are being identified as meeting threshold criteria for PTSD or depression who weren't originally identified. At the seven-month mark, 70% of those who met criteria either for PTSD or depression were not initially identified at the first-month mark, indicating that we really need to be not only screening initially, but recognizing that many of these service members, as well as their families, may have increasing difficulty over time just based upon the transitions that take place in returning from injured life. And this may be true for traumatic brain injury as well as other combat-related injuries. We like to think about injury, but we should be thinking about it less as an event but more as a process that can result in early challenges to families and young children where there's fear about the potential health or well-being of the parent, where there are separations. There are typically many, many complications and disruptions in families as a result of combat injury, and that over time, through hospital treatment as well as through transitions, depending upon the nature of that injury, there may have been profound effects on parental functioning, on parental personalities, on their ability to manage their anger or engage their children, or also families may move from communities where they had been for years as military service members into other communities when they transition from service. In the soldiers that we've looked at where they have had serious combat injuries, we know that there's a profound impact, or can be, on the parenting process. About over 95% of the severely injured are male. They're typically young men with a strong sense of themselves as parenting, as fathers in a physical fashion. And depending upon the nature of that injury, the loss of a limb, the change in their capacity to engage, all of that really changes the way they need to relate to their children. And so what we need to ask them to do, and part of that injury rehabilitation process, needs to be one in which they not only learn new strategies for working with the injuries that they have, but also how, based upon those injuries, do they need to be relating to children and other members of their family differently. This is a drawing that was done by a five-year-old that we had worked with at Walter Reed, whose father had bilateral lower extremity amputations. His He was asked to draw a picture of a person, not his father, but what he started off with, many of you may know, that most children start with the head and work the way down the body with draw a person. But this is a boy who started with the feet, and he began drawing sections of the feet up. And once he got to this point here, he realized he just had two legs. So he drew a strut across the two legs because something about the drawing seemed very disconnected and uncomfortable to him. He then proceeded to draw the arms. There was really no torso on the body and a small head. And you can still see sort of his identification of the dad with these big deltoid muscles here, that the strength of the father as he knew them. But also a preoccupation with the legs, what he then began to talk about were the prostheses that his father was going to be getting, and again, this is not a drawing necessarily depicting pathology, but the preoccupation, especially of young children, related to injury, not only how they understand their parent, but also how they understand the change in body integrity being young kids. Okay, we conducted a study of 41. Combat injured veterans looking at families at Walter Reed and Brook Army Medical Center using a measure that we had developed entitled the Parent Guidance Assessment Instrument that was a semi-structured interview used with the spouse about typically her experiences related to the injury, looking at things like disconnection, the level of distress in the family prior to the injury, but during the deployment, the impact of the injury on the continuity of the family, child distress, a number of factors, and found, in fact, that most spouses endorsed very high levels of deployment-related stress even prior to the injury. But after the injury, also were reporting high levels of family disruption as well as child distress. When it came to family disruption, if you remember that trajectory that I had shown just a few minutes ago, there were changes in living arrangements, changes in schedules, spending less time with children, and moderate to severe impact on discipline, all parts of parenting function and family functioning that were getting disrupted in the process. We found that there was moderate to severe effect in both changes in behavior and emotional difficulty in those children. And as a result, the major results of the study were that we had two relationships. One was a high pre-injury deployment family distress. So when families were having difficulty even before the injury occurred, they were much more likely to have challenges afterwards and reported high levels of child distress as a result of the injury. Similarly, those that had high family disruption post-injury also had very significantly higher levels of child distress. These are important findings because of the way we need to be thinking about supporting these families through the injury recovery and making sure that that families at risk or those with greater disruption, we implement important instrumental support to those families, not only for family health, but also for child health. At our center site, there you can download a number of resources there related to combat injury. This was the proceedings of a work group that was conducted in which we had folks come in to talk about the important principles of caring for combat injured families. Those principles included the importance of developing a sense of safety and connection for the families through the injury recovery process, that care needed to be family-focused, so meaning that at general hospitals or medical centers where service members were being treated, and this would be true for veterans hospitals or other civilian healthcare agencies, that we really need to ensure that military families are thought about, that kids are engaged, that they're protected from exposures within the hospital setting, and that also they're provided with support and care and engaged in the healthcare process. We need to make sure that care is developmentally aware and that is culturally sensitive, and that as needs change for the family over time, that care also addresses those needs in support of families and children. We talk about a concept called injury communication that I think is extremely important when we're thinking about PTSD and traumatic brain injury, related to the idea that during very difficult and challenging periods of time, it can be the most difficult times to communicate effectively around the challenges that may be faced resulting from injury. So how do we talk with children? How do parents talk with other adults in the families? How do we talk with healthcare providers to get our families' needs met? This was a whole program of resources that's available on our website and through the website CourageToTalk.org. Really intended to develop a shared understanding about the injury experience. So oftentimes kids are left abandoned in their understanding of what a parent is going through, and we do know that one of the most important and healthy things that we can do for military children is to help them understand, engage them in the process, and also make sure the parents understand the experiences of those kids, especially if there have been a lot of discontinuities in the family. Families Overcoming Under Stress, I had mentioned to you, is a program conducted out of UCLA and Harvard Medical School, really focusing on supporting military families through prevention strategies. This is a study that we're doing on a program called Focus CI that combines Focus's family preventive model with early combined collaborative care, a model that was developed by Doug Zadzik at the University of Washington that really describes the importance of engaging families early on and ensuring they have the instrumental care that they need in order to meet the needs of injury recovery. And so Focus CI, and I think these are important and critical elements of thinking about how do we engage families with any kind of injury or illness-related problem, that continued instrumental support is extremely important, especially as they transition across communities and through the healthcare system, move from medical centers to military medical centers to VAs to civilian services around the country. We want to ensure that we address any complicating factors. So if, in fact, there's a comorbid post-traumatic stress disorder that develops or there's a comorbid substance use disorder, part of the intervention is really to engage parents in recognizing that those problems can profoundly impact their families and their capacity to parent their children effectively. And through motivational interviewing, hopefully help them recognize that by addressing those much more actively, they're helping their kids and can be more positive in their engagement with their children over time. This idea of developing a shared understanding of the injury and the deployment experience, that doesn't mean that children need to hear everything about the experience that a parent went through, but what they do need to hear, and this is, I think, important, children need to hear, understand what they see and hear. So those things that they're witness to that confuse them, we need to make sure that we give parents the language to use to be able to talk with their kids about it. Even if it is that dad did some difficult things, he was involved in very difficult, he was involved in the war in Iraq or Afghanistan, saw things or experienced things that were difficult, makes it challenging for him or her to feel comfortable. He gets excited easily. It helps children with their own cognitive distortions about what that parent, why that parent may be changed and why they may be treating them in a way that's different from what they experienced before the deployment had occurred. And then finally, active problem solving and goal setting in families. So helping them prepare for the future, thinking about ways of effectively addressing the problems that they face, coming up with solutions and strategies. And some of these slides are not in your handout, so I'm happy to email them to you if you'd be interested in having them. But ways in which they can actively and concretely and practically manage with the challenges that result from a post-deployment life. And this idea of readiness and future focus, that we want to develop a sense of hopefulness for families, even when, in fact, there may be a post-traumatic stress disorder or a TBI that challenges that particular service member, the marriage, and the family. But what I mean by readiness is that that families may vary in their ability to feel like they're ready to move forward with their lives. So partly what we want to do is help them. Even if you have PTSD or if you have traumatic brain injury, we want to think carefully about when can that parent be more available to participate in activities. If they're too tired or if there are triggering actions that take place during the day, avoid those times in which those aren't great times for the family to be engaging. So picking, choosing, and planning effectively despite the presence of that illness or injury are ways in which families can move forward through the recovery, even with chronic illnesses. Okay, I want to talk briefly and close with a discussion about parental death in military families. When a death does occur, it can lead, obviously, to profound impact on kids, on families, that not only do they deal with the bereavement and the loss, but they also may have to deal with the loss of military communities that they were engaged with or military identities as military families. Kids may need to change schools, they may need to change communities, they'll leave and lose activities or move away from schools that they were familiar with. This is a book that we assisted and helped write section on for the Arlington Cemetery Project that provides a book to military kids after the death of a parent to help support them through the funerary process. Most military deaths occur in line of duty outside of combat theater. There's been over 15,000 deaths since 9/11. Almost 6,000 of those have been in Iraq and Afghanistan. Like many, like our civilian population, accidents are the number one cause of death in the military community, but also hostile action is present in 30% of the deaths, and suicide is highly represented as well in 13% of deaths. These are graphs that you may have seen in other talks over this conference that have looked at the increasing rates of active duty suicide deaths and the concerns, especially as we think about the challenges that suicide creates for families and for children in dealing with the death of a parent who has taken their lives themselves. There are no reported studies examining combat deaths on United States children, which is really quite astounding. We've never done a study of military bereavement. We're in the process of doing that now at our center. There are two Israeli studies that have looked at parent and family member death and its impact on children. In the first study, there were, again, 45% of children of combat killed fathers evidenced significant impairing behavioral problems, but really there was no difference from a comparison group of bereaved children with non-combat killed fathers. And in a study not of fathers or mothers, but of family members, another Israeli study of adolescents, they compared family members who had died in combat versus those who had died in a motor vehicle accident, and actually found better health in the combat deceased than the accidental deaths in children, likely, and again, very small and needs to be replicated, likely having to do with differences in meaning and a sense of potential purpose in a military combat-related death as opposed to an accidental death. We also know that in general, the death of a parent for children leads to certain poor outcomes. There's variability in the literature the way it's reported, but especially for young children, there's high vulnerability. And when you combine parental loss with other traumatic events, it puts kids at higher risk for more severe psychopathology. There's a discussion as to whether military children would be at higher risk for a construct such as childhood traumatic grief that some of you may be aware of that almost like a post-traumatic construct with grief in which traumatic elements of the grief disallow children to complete the bereavement process and therefore are stuck in the grief process and are unable to continue. I'm just going to mention a couple of things about a project that we had done with Sesame Street. Sesame has put together a number of important resources for military children under a series called Talk, Listen, and Connect to help military kids with the concept of deployment. TLC 2 is related to homecomings and changes that would be of interest to this audience because they address the challenge that military kids face related to parental TBI and PTSD and how they understand and integrate invisible injuries. So for those who work with younger kids or work with veterans who have younger children, it's an important resource. This particular study was with their TLC3 project, which was a study of were materials for young families with young children facing parental death, both military and civilian families. We did the evaluation of this particular project in fact, found tremendous value. It was very well received. They had a section in that in these materials related to parental suicide and did a case review of parental suicides, and all who participated in the evaluation remarked on the benefits of those materials. It gave us an opportunity, maybe for the first time, to look at some data comparing military versus civilian death on children. And again, we had a large number of combat-related deaths here and accidents, as well as medical illnesses. One of our main interests in this study was to look at whether or not combat-related deaths were different in terms of outcomes. These were child emotional problems and child peer problems subscales from the strengths and difficulties questionnaire. We did a subsampling here of sudden death only in our sample. We had a total sample of 185, but 154 were sudden death. And you can see that elevations in areas of emotional problems or peer problems were not present for combat death, that it appeared that suicide, homicide, and accident may in fact be at higher risk. However, when we checked for significance, that wasn't present. And similarly, in looking at childhood grief and measures of caregiver grief, complicated grief and depression, we found no differences and certainly no elevations in combat death. Okay, and I had mentioned, and we'll just maybe close on this slide, that we're in the process now of conducting a national study on military family bereavement. This is a distribution map of military family survivors around the country from one of our partnering organizations, showing where those families live. We're going to be focusing on four highly exposed regions and communities where we're hoping to recruit up to 100 families per four sites to collect information longitudinally on the impact of parental combat death on spouses, on children, spouses or adult partners, as well as families of origin, parents of service members and their siblings. So with that, I will close. That's just a little bit more about the study, but I'll close on this slide here. It's also got my email address. And again, at cstsonline.org, you can find more information about the work we do, as well as resources for military families and children. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this excerpt of the CME activity, Children and Families of Combat Veterans. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.